Most people only remember Branch Rickey as the man who broke baseball's color barrier in 1947 when he brought Jackie Robinson to the major leagues. But the charismatic Rickey had many triumphs and even a few failures, both in baseball and in his personal life. And that's the story that Lee Loewenfish tells in Branch Rickey, Baseball's Ferocious Gentleman, just recently released in a paperback edition by the University of Nebraska Press. I'm very pleased that it brings Lee Loewenfish back to the show. Hi, Lee.
Nice to be here, Leonard.
Beyond breaking the color barrier, which was a momentous thing, what are some of Branch Rickey's other major achievements?
The farm system is the great achievement that's so relevant today. Branch Rickey was in St. Louis running the Cardinals right before World War I. They had no money. He went to fight the war at the age of 36 in the Chemical Warfare Service, came back. They still had no money, so he had this idea. I'm a former college coach. I know how to evaluate players. Let's scour the country, find the best players, let them grow. We keep the best, trade or sell the ones who are not quite as good. And by 1926, he's got a team that beats the Yankees and Babe Ruth in the World Series, does it again in 1942. Ruth is gone by then, of course. But that idea sweeps baseball, and it's so relevant today still.
Well, he could create a farm team, but he had to have the team play other farm teams or other teams. How did he work that out?
Well, there were times when he, especially during the Depression, when all the minor leagues were suffering tremendously, they came to him and said, "Support our teams. We'll be glad to give you an agreement so you can get the best of the players." And by the time he left St. Louis, he had 740 players. The commissioner at the time, Landis, didn't like it, and he freed some of his farmhands in 1938. But most of them came back to St. Louis, and the one that got away, Pete Reeser, he wound up having when he came to the Dodgers.
Well, in those days, there was no draft, so it really depended on people having a good eye for talent. And you say that, if anything, Branch Rickey had a great eye for talent.
Yes, he saw the spiritual and physical part of the game. I mean, his name was Wesley Branch Rickey, and so he was really he believed in Methodism, and in fact, if he had wanted to go into the ministry, he sort of could have done well in it.
Didn't attend Sunday games.
He didn't attend Sunday games, and you know, I just found out, and this is a great thing about the story of Rickey, because you just learn more things about him, and he was humble. He was arrogant and humble at the same time. I mean, he once told a scout that he only understood 55% of the game, but he always wanted to learn more about it. And I just found out that a wonderful piece I used in my book, right before he left Brooklyn, a writer, Robert Rice, got a great story out of Rickey, that the whole thing about not going Sunday was because his mother, when he lost his job in Cincinnati in 1904, his mother defended him to the town atheist in this little town in southern Ohio and said, "My boy Branch has principles." And the atheist says, "Yeah, but he lost his job." And because of that, because his mother, who has supported him all his life, spiritually, he said, "I'm going to make a vow. I'm not going to come on Sunday," because she was very pious and loved learning, and secular learning. But you know, she was afraid, and we don't have to read the papers to find out what kind of trouble athletes get into then and now. So he vowed that he would just spend Sunday in church or contemplating, and he kept that throughout his life.
He also wanted his players to be married. He thought that made them more stable.
That's correct. I mean, he had this great term, matrimonial coward. If a player or his scout, his first great scout, Charlie Barrett, they didn't get married, he called them matrimonial cowards. But he worked with anyone who wanted to understand and make the game of baseball better.
But let's go back to the farm system. There's a negative side to that farm system, and that is you sign a kid, and then he is yours for the rest of his life unless you trade him. And that didn't end until free agency, long after Branch Rickey was dead.
That's true. Well, it was only 10 years after he died. But what he believed, though, is that the game, to succeed at the highest level, Major League, and we're finding out, the Mets and even the Yankees are finding out that there's AAA, there's AAA. The Major League ability is very rare. And he felt that if I have the best coaches, I have the best instructors, and I'm going to if you stay under my aegis, you're going to be fine. Now, the negative side of that, of course, was that the players did, as you say, have no freedom, and unless they were released or traded. And this is the whole problem that baseball still deals with. It's fairer for the players now, but there's a great line that I heard from Jack Dunn, the third, whose father or grandfather sold Babe Ruth, that it's hard to get up early in the morning when you're wearing silk pajamas. Now, Branch Rickey didn't say it, but I think he would have loved it, because we're seeing this with a lot of high-paid players who don't have that extra oomph to be better.
And I heard the other side of that story, and I'm going to give you fake numbers, but I remember reading that Mickey Mantle batted 347 one season, got a $5,000 raise. The next year, he batted 325, and they wanted the $5,000 back.
Absolutely.
Today, of course, that would mean he would get $10 million more, because that suggests real consistency at a high level.
It is a problem now. And of course, I don't believe a lot of the numbers that are in the newspapers, you know, but certainly they're making a lot. And that whole business of the incentive to improve is not as great as it was in the old days. And in the paperback edition that Nebraska has just put out, Leonard, I begin with a story that John Paul Stevens told me. John Paul Stevens knew Rickey when the seller committee was investigating the reserve clause after World War II.
I thought Stevens had been an umpire at some point.
No, that's a different Stevens. John Paul Stevens was the Republican counsel to that seller committee. And he was he still remembers a half century later. Branch Rickey really believed that players had to be hungry and relatively underpaid, because then they would compete for the World Series share.
Well, how did that affect him after he was out of Major League Baseball and he was helping to create the Continental League?
Well, that became a real dilemma for him, because he was a Republican. I mean, he was a conservative, but I don't think a neoconservative Republican, and I would not think he would have liked the whole idea of invading Iraq. But he didn't like government interference in private business. But that was the dilemma he faced, because the old guard didn't want Branch Rickey and these new rich owners to come into their bailiwick. And they had no players and they had no stadiums. And yet he almost pulled it off.
Well, he would have had to have raided their minor league teams.
Well, he would have called at the end of the Continental League, which never played a game, but they did have a minor league in that I talk about in the book in West Carolina. He was calling for a limited amount of free agency for players, minor leaguers. So it wouldn't have been rated. It would have been in the contract. But it never really came to pass.
My guest is Lee Loewenfisch, who has also written about jazz, but most of the work has been on sports, and his latest is a biography of Branch Rickey, Baseball's Ferociousest Gentleman. It has been updated, new introduction for the new paperback edition from Bison Books, which is a division, the paperback division of University of Nebraska Press. He was interested in starting all sorts of things. He wanted to start a Brooklyn Dodgers football team, didn't he? There was also a New York Yankees football team at the same time.
It's a fascinating story that we don't get to talk about enough. I'm glad that we can. The Brooklyn Dodgers football team existed in the 1930s. And they were pretty good. They had Jock Sutherland as their coach, who had been the great coach at the University of Pittsburgh, and Stan Lomax, who I used to do shows with here at NYC, knew Sutherland at Cornell. And they had Ace Parker. They had some really good players. But during World War II, they fell on bad times. And Rickey, because he loved football as well as baseball, I mean, not as much, but he took over the team in 48. But they never got going. I mean, it was the All-American Football Conference. The only good team was the Cleveland Browns, who ultimately came into the National Football League.
And dominated for 10 years.
I know. And Brown, like Rickey, were Ohio boys who were very inspirational coaches who really knew how to get winners together. But he just didn't have the time in football. And it was a big issue when Walter O'Malley started building a case, because they did lose money on the Dodgers.
Well, Rickey was a lawyer, although I don't know if he ever practiced law. How did he wind up running baseball teams. It was the Cardinals, and then who else?
Well, he started with the Browns, and actually the Browns is where he first brought up the farm system.
The St. Louis Browns.
That's right.
Which were the perennial losers.
Well, under him, they started to get better. Never really a contender, but they had George Sisler. And, you know, the amazing thing about Ricky and how much baseball history is in his story, he had George Sisler at the University of Michigan. And he converted George Sisler from a pitcher to a first baseman, where he was, if he had bad eyes and he lost a year later in his career, he still wound up with over 2,800 hits and a .340 career average.
And batted over 400 one season.
Twice. The thing, too, with Sisler, in terms of the connections, and I'm always loving connections, Leonard, George Sisler became a coach in Brooklyn and then in Pittsburgh when Ricky went to Pittsburgh. It was George Sisler who was Jackie Robinson's instructor in 1947 when he was playing first base.
Now, you said that he was a Republican, and yet he is the maybe the world has changed. I guess the Republican Party was the party of Abraham Lincoln. Was that a reason that he decided to start scouting black baseball players?
Absolutely. It was part of it. I mean, the whole Robinson story is a beautiful example of ego and conscience coming together. I mean, Branch Rickey left St. Louis when his owner, Sam Braden, decided he wasn't worth what he was paying. I mean, and Branch Rickey made a lot of money in baseball. He's really the highest paid personnel person in baseball until DiMaggio and Williams. And so he comes to Brooklyn, and he wants to do something in Brooklyn that hasn't been done before. And he finds Brooklyn to be a ideal place because it was a lot of churches, a lot of ethnicities, and he got a sense early on that that Brooklyn would accept a good African-American player.
Although not all of his players on the team. Right. Dixie Walker, for example.
Although I put in a word for Dixie Walker, because Dixie Walker admitted, as did Bobby Bregan, that they didn't want to play with him, but they confronted Ricky with it. And Ricky liked people who confronted him. And he really believed he could out-talk anybody and convince them. He had a sign in his office that in St. Louis, Brooklyn, Pittsburgh, "He who will not reason is a bigot. He who cannot reason is a fool. He who dares not to reason is a slave." And he lived that way. And so ultimately, Walker was very glad that he played with Robinson, and he was traded to Pittsburgh only because he wanted to keep his career going. I mean, Branch Rickey wanted him to manage St. Paul in the minor leagues. And so I think Walker has gotten a bad rap because he admitted he was from the South, and it wasn't going to look good to his folks back there. And Ricky basically talked him into saying, "Robinson, you don't have to live with him. You work with him, and he's going to win you a pennant." And as indeed happened.
Now, much has been written about why he chose Jackie Robinson rather than Satchel Paige or Josh Gibson, the two big stars of the Negro Leagues. But why not Roy Campanella or Larry Doby, who both broke into the majors not long afterward and became superstars in their own rights?
Well, Doby, Bill Veeck did bring in later that 1947. Doby didn't have as much college experience as Jackie Robinson did, and the fact that Jackie Robinson had played as an equal for UCLA was so important to the story. Roy Campanella didn't have that background. And Branch Rickey had an amazing insight that Jackie Robinson was going to face all kinds of things that no ordinary person was going to face. And that famous 1945 meeting, 2 weeks after the end of World War II, it was amazingly prescient, you know. And he acted out everything that was going to happen. So, I mean, Robinson, he really was another example of picking a man for the time.
It was also good that the Dodgers Triple A team was in Montreal, not in some southern city. That might have caused a lot of trouble.
And they had Newcomb and Campanella in Nashua, New Hampshire, and that year also, because New Hampshire, Illinois didn't want Newcomb and Campanella. And Walter Alston managed them, and ultimately he came to manage both Brooklyn and L.A.
Now, we have very little time, and we've only been describing Branch Rickey as this great, great man, but he had his faults.
Well, he had to dominate most situations. And he did take advantage of the players at contract time. There's no doubt of that. But one of the epigraphs I have in the Brooklyn section of my book is that he was one of the slyest men who ever lived, but in all fundamentals, a man of honor. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he should be remembered for. And I'm glad that I just came back from Texas, where I represented him in the election to the College Baseball Hall of Fame. And there I am with a big cowboy hat on, riding a 4th of July parade in Lubbock, Texas. So all thanks to Branch Rickey. And for those who want to talk about this some more, I do this Columbia sport history class in their graduate sport management program. We'll be doing a lot more on the life and times of Branch Rickey, which are really our life and times.
Well, Branch Rickey, the man who probably did two of the most important things to change the course of baseball history, create the farm system, and also integrate baseball. The book by Lee Loewenfisch is published by Bison Books, the paperback version of University of Nebraska Press. Thank you so much for being with us again, Lee.
A pleasure.